David X, it's been a minute.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's like a spring in Ohio already. I got to get my motorcycle out. I can't wait.
I was thinking about as I was driving around Texas this weekend and was passed several times by folks on very fast motorcycles being driven unsafely.
And yeah, wasn't me.
You're right. And what I thought of how disapproving you might have been if you saw these motorcyclists. I noticed that there were several touring bikes as well, and some of them had very rectangular like lock boxes on the back, and then other folks had mm-hmm. something more aerodynamic, a little more streamlined, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in the three bag configuration, one on top, two on the side.
Oh yeah, full dresser. Yeah.
Full dresser. Okay. I knew there must have been a word for that. Okay. Do you have a preference on the I like the old school kind of locker box situation. I saw the value in that. And then I also saw the streamlining kind of more fuel efficient kind of storage boxes. Do you have a preference?
Naked. Yeah.
Talk about the motorcycle now. We're talking about the motorcycle.
Oh, the motorcycle. Yeah. No. To me, I don't have any bags. I like the naked look of the motorcycle, like to, and I'm not going like across country. And so I don't get the saddle bags or the full dresser and all that stuff. And, to me, it's like, yeah, if I did that, I would. But if I do go for, like, usually I'll do like day trips and I'm home at night. So I'm not really packing anything.
Yeah.
And if I did, if I went to like visit my mom or something, I would have a backpack, and that's fine. That gets me there, it gets me back and everything. But I sort of like having the bike look for itself instead of having the functionality of an utility behind it.
Right. Right. Yeah, I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's awesome to see that out there. And what else is what's going on with you?
There's a ton of stuff going on right now. Getting excited for Red Hat Summit. Getting pumped up. We're in the last 20 days, 19 days before that. And so that's mostly what I'm about right now. Although I did find time last night to enjoy, and I'm using that word generously, the Fallout series that just started on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is based on the video game, which I've never played before in my life. Mm-hmm. I did play a derivative game, which is called Fallout Shelter, which is like a town building game where you have to like build your underground vault and all with all your vault dwellers and stuff like, so I'm kind of through that. I know a little bit of the lore. But it was clear in watching the show, I've seen two episodes so far, that they're doing a ton of fan service and they seem to be treating treating the lore reverently. So that's nice. Like a really interesting and fun world, right? I mean, I think this game has been around for 20 years, right? So they've been building lore on this thing, the mythology around it for 20 years. And so there's a bunch of fun stuff in there. The only thing I would caution folks against, definitely go see it, enjoy it. It's on Amazon Prime, I think, but just be aware that it is egregiously gory, like super, super gory. So much so that I believe I will be finishing the series on my own, if you know what I mean.
Oh, okay. So it's sort of like worse than like Walking Dead with the crowbars.
Way worse. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I've seen a ton of gory stuff in my life and I was shocked.
Wow.
So a little bit too bad, because it does seem like a fun story. It's like a good setup. You got a man comes to town, man leaves town, lots of good subplots in here, kind of overshadowed by the amount of human entrails in the show. It's a little bit too bad.
Do you think it's necessary? Like, would you enjoy it more if there was less of it?
I would enjoy more if there was less of it. Yeah it was too much. In my opinion.
Interesting. To me, there's a limit, right? It's like, does it move the story forward and all that? And there were some of those things like with The Walking Dead that it was like, it's a little too much, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was so much, it was cartoonish.
Yeah.
And so And which I kind of get because like the rest of the show is kind of cartoonish, right? But it kind of, but it took you out of the narrative. It took you out of the story. It made you realize you were, the illusion was broken as a result. So for that reason, anyway. But if you go in there knowing that that's what's going to happen, you can maybe you could muscle your way through.
So, on my end, so you are like an Apple AirPods man yourself?
So I'm actually currently I'm a
Beats?
Beats Pro because it's good for the running,
Oh, okay.
but yeah, I've got at any given time there's probably several pairs of Apple AirPods strewn around the house between the for the whole family, you know.
Because I dabbled a little bit with the noise cancellation, with the big ones, right? The big earphones, and it's like, it's okay and everything. And then, I had, but for me, it wasn't very functional because, like, you're walking around. I don't want to walk around outside with the big cans on my ears, right? And so I would do like the Pixel Buds A, which didn't do noise cancellation, but it would actually turn the volume up. Like if it would be in a noisy environment, it would actually turn the volume up, which is kind of cool, like faux noise cancellation, I guess. And then and it but it started acting up, so it's like, all right, I'll just let me try the new ones that are on sale, the Pixel Buds Pro, and I got a hold of them, and then it's like I put them in my ears and I'm like, huh, that's kind of interesting. And then it's like, I hear like a whoosh, and then like nothing. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I hear absolutely, it's like, I didn't think that earbuds would be so noise cancelly. Like I would think something would be getting through. And it's like, holy crap, this is amazing. And it's like, it's almost like, I don't know, like as an introvert, like it's like you want your little fortress of solitude and you want to just have some quiet time for yourself. It's like you pop those in and it's like you're like extracted from reality of your surroundings and everything. It's just amazing.
Wow, is it too much?
No.
Like too,
I
you know what I mean? Because I find it disorienting if you're like fully cut off, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing I learned that it's like in the home office or whatever, that's great. But it's like if you're walking around outside or walking the dog, it's like it's a great way to get run over by a car, with all the noise cancellation and and it's you're crossing the street, you hear nothing. So they have a, I guess you could switch the modes easily to like I guess there's like an ambient mode that'll do like the sound pass through a little bit more and all that, and it's like okay. But yeah, I can't get enough of the noise cancellation. It's like just wonderful.
That's great. That's great. It's real, man. It's having a good set of your goggles that you can that can be your kind of daily drivers. That's so important. It's so important.
Well, and think how much we're on video calls all day long. It's like you want them to sound good. It's like a good pair of shoes, right? It's like you're wearing them all day long. You want them to be comfortable. You want them to like perform and everything. It's just, yeah, it's it's something you don't, life's too short to go cheap on that,
100% agree. 100% agree. Yeah, that's right.
And then meanwhile, remember we talked about the Google Gemini Advance where you pay up for all the fancy AI?
Oh yeah. That's right. And I guess they finally sorted out all the overlapping branding problems. I don't know why Google can never figure this out, but they always have a this anyway, it said there was a Google Pro or Advanced.
Pro is the free version, and then advanced is the one you pay for. And it's like I agree, it's like they're terrible with all the naming. So there's well, no, I guess there's Google Gemini, which is like the brand, and then there's a free version, and then you could pay up for Gemini Advanced, Okay. And then that's a different model. And then there's the pro model that is in the free version, but it's confusing. Yeah. Anyhow, since we last talked, you know, I don't know if you saw in the press about how Google was getting in trouble for doing like being like overly politically correct with their image generation.
Oh, and, yes. Yeah, I heard about this. Yeah.
So they just like turned it off completely. And so it's like you could do like, hey, I want to do, you know, a landscape or whatever. Yeah, I'll give you it'll do landscape images all day long. But the moment it's like there's a person in it, it's like, sorry, I can't do that. And even if it's like innocuous or whatever, and it's like, meanwhile, it's like, and it's the same with the text generation too. Like if it's anything remotely political, like imagine it's like, I'm a high school student doing a report on the election coming up this year. And I want to know the pros and cons or the platforms of each candidate. Right.
Yeah.
And I want to study that. It'll be like, no, I can't help you with that. Cause it's like, and it's very much like that AI model that we talked about in one of the previous episodes. It was like so safe that it was not useful. This is like art or life imitating art. It's like so not useful unless you're talking about something just like totally like plain, right? And but you know, in the meantime, you know, it's like if you could, like Google has like Safe Search, and you could turn Safe Search off and everything. So like, I don't know why they don't have that, or if they're like, you know, are they protecting the customer from getting something that they don't want, or are they protecting society to prevent a customer from doing a bad thing? You know what I mean? Like, are they having like the customer could use that the AI to generate propaganda or fake news or whatever?
Yeah.
And like, I'm not sure what they're trying to do, but do you have a take on that? Where should the safety valves be placed?
So here's one. I don't have an answer, but I do have a frame for this that I think might be helpful, which is it's not about the AI doing something badly. Is that one of the reasons why they pulled the feature is because it prevented the customer from doing the right thing, which is different than protecting them from doing the wrong thing. You know what I mean? Because the actual bug, for example, was like you could explicitly ask for a particular ethnicity in a image of a person and then not get it. Right.
Right. Right.
And so that is, which is a different thing than it's wrong, but wrong in a different way than, for example, like always producing the same ethnicity. Right.
Right.
And I think, so it's less about, so that there's one category of things you can do to kind of prevent, like I said before, prevent a customer from doing the wrong thing, right? Or building in a bias or whatever. And then there's another one, which is the thing literally doesn't do what the customer asked it to do, right?
Right.
And yeah. I think if that tool allowed a customer to request a particular ethnicity and get back that ethnicity, I'm not sure that they would interpret that as a bug. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't get the impression that they're trying to be nannies about it as much as they overcorrected for the bias in the first category and ended up breaking it in the second category. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you think that they, you know, one way to fix it would be, it's like, hey, give me a picture of a group of Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, from, you know, hundreds of years ago, right? And you know, in the by default, it would generate a culturally diverse group of Vikings, which isn't necessarily reflective of the way we've seen it happen, right?
Yeah, right.
And but you would think, so one way would be, it's like, okay, if it's maybe it could be, you know, diverse by default, and then you could change it to say that, no, not really, I'd really like it this way.
Yeah.
Or you could say, hey, give me a group of doctors or whatever, and it would give you a, it would be like, hey, here's a sample image. Do you want to go with this, or you know, would you like something a little bit more diverse? That it's not all white men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so instead of like, oh, I can't do this or I won't do this.
Yeah. Well, I think no, you're getting somewhere important. So those are two different problems. So the first is something that is probably historically wrong, right? Like, show me an image of George Washington, and then it gives you, you know, somebody who, like, with Asian descent, right? Okay, well, that's wrong, right? That's just straight wrong, right? There's no value judgment to be made here. It's just not correct historically, right? Which I imagine has to be, like, fiendishly difficult to train for, you know what I mean? Like, it requires a whole corpus of background and knowledge to know what the right answer might be, and I suspect that that's kind of difficult. But that's okay. But then you ask for a list of doctors. So the hypothetical you have, which is like, I ask for a set of doctors and shows me all qualifications. Then you say like, oh, I want it more diverse. Okay. Already there are some moral judgments being made there, which is the presumption is that it is going to be a set of white doctors. And then it is going to be a second option, right, to have a diverse group of doctors, when in fact we know that in the world the set of doctors is quite diverse to start with, right?
Right.
And so the presumption that the presumptive image being actually inaccurate is a different problem. You see what I mean?
Right. Right. It's actually two separate sets of problems. One is wrong. They're both wrong in different ways.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And I'm not sure that Gemini knows at this point why those two things are different or the way in which they should be different, right? They were trying to solve the second problem with trying to create these diverse images, and in the process broke the first category, right? I can see why this was not an easy fix. Because the other thing is like, you know, you're trying to train this thing, and it's dumb. It's just a computer, right? It's just a rock that thinks. And so, you have to be like, well, no. In this case, an image of a diverse set of people is correct and accurate and all the rest of it. But when I ask for George Washington, almost every time I'm gonna expect it to be Caucasian, right?
Right.
And yeah. Knowing the difference between those two things is that it seems like that is a difficult thing to train for, as apparently, right? Because Google has a bunch of very smart people who are working on this problem, and they couldn't get it right. I think the sin that they had, right, is not realizing how broken it was when they shipped it.
Yep.
Right.
But is Midjourney and everybody else having the same problem?
You know, I don't know. I've not been following it that closely. I'm not sure, right. But I think what it ends up creating is like, we've got kind of a HAL situation here, right? Where it's like, well, you got to go train the thing to do the thing that you want. And the real question is, what is it that you want? Right.
Right.
And so I think AI's, I think it's interesting that it's forcing us to be helpfully introspective about exactly what our biases are and where we need to, where we feel like we should be intervening on the biases and where we shouldn't. Right.
Yeah. And I wonder too, it's like how much of the, like, you know how like there's the prompt that you give it, but how much of the pre-prompt that you don't see?
Yes.
Google putting the thumb on the scale for the result that it thinks is the, you know, from a societal standpoint, the quote unquote right result.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. And I will wager, I will put all the money in my pockets that there are, you have different presumptions in different locations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a set of presumptively correct answers are going to be different if I do a particular query in India versus China versus the United States versus Germany, right?
Yeah.
It's a hard problem. Like, just speaking clinically about it, like it is a difficult computational problem, right?
Yep. No, true. Like if you go and say, hey, you're on the Indian version of Gemini, you know, or you know, you're using it from that geography, and you ask for a group of doctors, you know, should it be tailored for that region?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
that's the first question, right? Like, do we tailor by region? And if we do tailor by region, in what way are we going to tailor it by region, right? Yeah. It gets into a hornet's nest of problems, right? And by the way, we're only talking about ethnicity because that's easy, right? And like, and it's easy to know when that's wrong. But I mean, there's all kinds of cultural assumptions. And as you know, if you have the unenviable job of training an AI, you have to figure out what cultural assumptions you are going to build in, which ones you're not going to build in, and which ones you are actively going to discourage.
Yep. Well, and there's the cultural part, and then there's also like what country you're in for what the political narrative that is allowable.
Right. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Because I know that's like, I saw some, was it Mistral? It's like a French startup, former Google people. And, you know, the thought there is that, or the premise is that we need to have a European-based large language model because we don't want the training and the thumbs on the scale based on a United States perspective and culture, right? Yeah. We want a European-flavored one. And you can imagine in China, they probably want to have one that is based on, you know, the right opinions and politics and that would not diverge from what would be unacceptable there.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast in the past. The Pope, all people, not somebody I invoke very often, but the Pope wrote Laudato Si, and in Laudato Si, he writes, he warns us about the effects of technology on society, and he has this great line that I think about often, which is choices which may at first seem purely instrumental are in fact decisions about the world we want to live in. And this example of like how to train an AI, what a correctly trained AI looks like, is a perfect example of this, right? These are all decisions that seem instrumental, but they are in fact, they do in fact have an influence on culture and how people think and how people present, how the world is presented to people. And there's a moral obligation that comes with that. So shame on Google for releasing this thing in the first place, but good on them for shutting it down, right?
Yeah. Well, but they're still taking my money. to pay up for something that's turned off. So it's like that kind of stinks, you know?
Yeah. Well, Google has a long and storied history of shutting things down that we really liked.
Yeah. World famous. Yeah. Google Podcast just went by the wayside just a little while ago. So,
for example, that's right.
Yeah. Speaking of podcasts, we have a great show lined up.
All right.
Yeah. And we're not going to be talking about AI after this. Or we'll see. But let's see. We got, we're going to be talking about printer cartridges with viruses. We're going to talk about cryptography with psychedelics.
Nice.
And we're going to talk about drinking with baskets.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So for people to get the link to the Fallout series and all that good stuff, where should we send them?
Yeah, they need to go to dgshow.org. That's D as in Dave, G as in Gunner, show.org.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then cutting room floor. So I said we weren't going to talk about AI, but real quick. That somebody put, remember we talked about a CPU implemented inside of Excel?
Yeah.
Somebody implemented GPT-2 inside of an Excel spreadsheet.
That's cursed. It's cursed.
Yeah. And I guess the reason why somebody did it was for educational purposes to see how a transformer actually does all the math and everything. So it's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
And then another thing is that there's a guy that created a dating app where the only person you could date in the dating app is the guy that wrote the app.
Love it.
Yep.
Be the change you want to see in the world. That's what I say.
Exactly. And so basically you install it and it's like you plug in your profile or whatever. And then it's like you're presented with this guy and it's like you swipe left and you swipe right. And it's you swipe left if you don't like him and you might as well like uninstall the app because you're sort of done. And otherwise you could swipe right and keep the relationship going. So you got that You can try it out. And then there's reggaeton, Be Gone. So there was, so we haven't talked about Internet of Things in a while and Raspberry Pis and whatnot. So there's this guy. Imagine you have a neighbor in your apartment next door, 9 a.m. every day. He's like blasting reggaeton on his Bluetooth speaker, 9 a.m., like clockwork. And you could either go across the hall and knock on his door and say, please don't do that.
Yeah.
Or you could build an AI device that can handle the situation. And this guy did the latter. So he built a device that will, I think it's on a Raspberry Pi. It will listen for audio. It'll diagnose whether that audio is reggaeton. And so it'll figure out if it's that genre of music. It will seek out that Bluetooth speaker and then create interference to disrupt it.
That is, well, first of all, that's mean, but also very, very clever.
Yeah, definitely an introvert. He wants to put that effort into not, as opposed to walk across the hall and have a difficult conversation. So
yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, so let's see. Let's talk about difficult conversations. So there was the HP CEO. This is a little while ago, I think in January. But CEO Enrique Lores, there's the HP being criticized with. It's like you have to buy the HP branded ink, or it will not work with third party ink.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
And according to the CEO, it's actually for security reasons and not for money reasons.
Tell me more.
Yes. So he said on CNBC that we have seen that you can embed viruses in the cartridges, and through the cartridge, the virus can go to the printer and then from the printer go to the network.
Okay, and presumably he's saying this in order to justify the DRM on their cartridges.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Yes.
At any point did anyone suggest to him that maybe the fact of somebody being able to transmit a virus from the toner cartridge to the printer might actually be the problem?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So it winds up that in they added this. The DRM feature called Dynamic Security back in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
But it wound up that there was some researcher in 2022 that actually figured out a way to make the virus thing actually happen.
Uh-huh.
And so basically it's like the solution was created in 2016 and an exploit was created to prove that it could possibly happen in 2022. And it winds up that there's a serial interface between the cartridge and the printer that could trigger a buffer overflow. And that buffer overflow would allow the hacker to give them the ability to inject code into the device that persists after the cartridge is removed.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and like you said, and when I was, enjoying the article, I'm like thinking, why don't you just fix the buffer overflow problem?
Right.
And do you really need the DRM for this? Right. Why do you have to have, this communication with your cartridge anyhow? Is it to like telemetry on how much ink is left and stuff like that? And could that be more secure? Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, whenever HP first announced Dynamic Security in 2016, it claimed that the feature would deliver the best consumer experience and it would protect customers from cartridges that infringe on the HP's intellectual property.
Of course. That's right.
Very, so thoughtful of them, right?
Yeah.
And then the article talked about when people buy an HP printer, they consider it an investment, but HP thinks that when you buy a printer, the company is investing in the customer.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yes.
Because they're selling the printers at a loss, right?
Right. Yeah. And so what he said, the CEO said that this is something we announced a few years ago, and our goal was to reduce the number of what we call unprofitable customers. Because every time a customer buys a printer, it's an investment to us. We're investing in that customer. And if that customer doesn't print enough or doesn't use our supplies, it's a bad investment.
He said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's too bad. You're not supposed to read the stage directions. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Out loud. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's what's going on there. And then have you ever heard of the term psychedelic cryptography?
I think I tried to write some psychedelic cryptography in college, but I think there's probably a different definition than I'm thinking of.
Okay. Maybe not. There are these researchers, I guess, that they've created a competition focused on psychedelic cryptography where they award cash prizes to artists who make videos encoded with hidden messages that can most easily be deciphered by a person who's tripping on a psychedelic substance such as LSD, ayahuasca, or psilocybin mushrooms.
What's the mechanism? How does that work?
So I guess you have some sort of like, I guess, trippy video clip that you look at. And to the person that is like sober, it just looks like a trippy video clip. Mm-hmm. But if you take the psychedelic substance, it will allow you to actually see a hidden message inside of the trippy video clip. So I guess there's the, and I've never done any psychedelics ever, I guess what will happen is that there are these tracers that you would see, trails of color and after images, and taking advantage of that, they're able to use that effect to write out messages in those tracers that would be incomprehensible to a sober person, but understood by somebody on psychedelics.
I see. Well, you know, sure. What's the... So they were able to muster a cash prize for this.
Yes.
Yes. To what end?
Don't know. Why not? I don't know. And that's, I'm wondering too. It's like, you know, it's like, talk about, you know, solutions looking for a problem, right? Or it's like, you know, dude, let's get a grant, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that strikes me is folks on psychedelics are famously receptive to, you've probably heard the thing of like, you take a Wizard of Oz and play Pink Floyd's The Wall at the same time, right? Yeah. And then you're supposed to get, and then they're supposed to be synced up as you're listening to the audio from the album and you're watching the movie, and then there's supposed to be kind of secret messages, or like you get a kind of a story is told as you're looking at these things. So anyway, my point being that folks on psychedelics are already receptive to receiving messages that may or may not be there. And so the real question is, how do you craft a psychedelic cryptography that someone can trust was intentional as opposed to one that was manufactured by the tripping person's brain?
Yes. And well, maybe what you do is, and I think what happened in this case is that they actually had a review board of the people that would all take the psychedelics. And and so imagine it's sort of like a film festival on psychedelics where you have a board of people that are like voting on which is the, you know, which message comes through. And I don't know if it's like best, you know, 3 out of 4, if they could decipher it and, you know, they come to a consensus of what the right message is.
Yeah. This feels to me like, I don't know, sophomore year in college. This is like I'm trying to figure out, you know what? Good for them exploring something that is under-researched, I think, safe to say.
Exactly. And it's, I admire their gumption to like make a quasi film festival out of this and try to, you know, have a good reason to enjoy psychedelics.
That's right. Yeah. Good for them. That's right.
Yeah. Put it to good use instead of like, think of all the wasted time people just took psychedelics and didn't do any cryptography, you know?
That's right. They just sat there listening to Black Sabbath albums doing nothing. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And lastly, speaking of listening to Black Sabbath albums and doing nothing. So like, I remember how like the like drunk driving was a thing, right? And then mm-hmm. Uber comes along and the ride share, and it's like, wow, that yeah, people's too inebriated or whatever. It's like you could have like the gig economy take care of society and take the drunk person home and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned this a little while ago that in Turkey in the 1960s. They actually had basket men.
Oh, tell me more. What did they do?
Yeah, so if somebody was too drunk to walk, you would have the bar would have a basket man come. You would put the drunk person in this basket. Imagine a wicker basket, and then. The basket man would like put the basket on his shoulders and he would carry that person to his home and take him home.
That's good, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
So it's in Turkish, I guess there's kufe, which means being so drunk you cannot walk. And then there's another saying, kuflik olmak, meaning needing to be carried home in a basket.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if you and it winds up that it's not the drunk person paying the basket man, it's actually the bars. The bars would hire the basket men to take their patrons home.
Smart. That's smart.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
But if you check it out in the click the link there, and there's actually in the article there are two pictures of like action photos of the basket men with customers. And how would you describe the two pictures?
What I thought I was going to see is a kind of a rickshaw situation.
Yeah.
And that's not what I'm seeing here. What I'm seeing here is a basket, the kind where you might take like you might carry a sack of grain in, maybe, right?
Yeah, like a very large laundry basket.
Yeah, like imagine like a pastoral medieval painting and folks threshing wheat or whatever, and the basket they have on their back, that's the basket we're talking about. Yeah. And
I'm off a Led Zeppelin album.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And except instead of a bundle of wheat, it's a bundle of drunk. That you're carrying around on your back. It's hilarious.
Yeah. And like the first picture, it looks like the guy is like giving a speech or something.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
He's carrying on passionately. And then I can't, the basket man has kind of a knowing smirk on his face.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, this is how it ends for him. You know, this is my life this is where I'm at. And then check out the second picture there.
Oh, yeah, this guy's having a grand time.
Yeah, yeah, much better than the first guy. That's sort of like shouting or having a speech. This, what he's like, sort of like, it's like he's sitting in a bathtub.
Yeah,
with his feet like his butt's in the basket, his feet are out.
Yeah,
he's holding his hat. He's happy. He's thrilled.
He's having a great time.
So,
fantastic. Yeah,
there you have it. So. So in meetings, kuflik olmak, needing to be carried home in a basket. That's the challenge. Try to use that in a meeting this week. Yeah.
Great.
All right. So if people have reggaeton that they need to get rid of, or they're looking to date that one special guy, or they need some psychedelics and do some cryptography, where should we send them?
Yeah, they need to go to a dgshow.org. That's D as in Dave, G as in Gunner, show.org.
Awesome. All right. Okay, Gunner. Well, thanks, everybody. And see you all next time.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, everyone.